The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
Thank you for downloading the Radio Today programme, the weekly podcast from Radio Today. We're going to talk at some length this week to the Chief Operating Officer of UTV Media PLC. You heard him last week talking about D2. There are lots of other things on his mind, I'm sure. Scott Taunton, thank you for joining us. I want to start by just asking you how an Australian feels just after the World Cup performance.
Well, in this building, let me tell you, I'm currently sat in one of the TalkSport studios, as you know, and these opportunities are few and far between in recent years. I took over here in 2005, and Australia had held the Ashes for 16 years at that stage, and we haven't won it, certainly on this soil, since. So I've made the most of it, as you can expect.
I was hoping to get you for our 100th birthday programme, because I wanted to do some kind of thing about Australians and centuries and all that kind of stuff, but it's been very hard to get you. And the reason I mention that is that your job title, Chief Operating Officer, UTV Media, what does that mean? I mean, there's a chief executive or a group chief executive above you. I know UTV has interests in television and radio, obviously in Ireland, but in the UK as well. How much of your time do you spend in each of those territories?
Well, I have been spending a good bit of time in Ireland, even whilst my title remained as Managing Director of UTV Media GB. I've obviously been on the UTV board for nearly 10 years now and have a strong role, for want of a better phrase, in our investor relations team and in dealing with our shareholders and the wider board. We have more recently launched a new television service, which is very exciting for the group, UTV Ireland, which launched on the 1st of January this year. And as part of my expanded role, I've taken on the sales operations for television, both in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. So at the minute, I'm spending about 3 days a week on the Irish operations and about 2 days a week in London.
So how much of your time, Scott, do you spend listening to the radio and watching the television? Or are you really a businessman in that sense that you could be working in any industry?
Well, if you were to ask anyone in the operations, they would. The less I listen and the less I watch, the happier they will be. But I still obviously take time to listen to the output that we have, not just for TalkSport, but our local radio stations as well. And thankfully, you know, with streaming services that we have, I get a good chance to listen to those over time. And indeed, at the moment, you know, UTV Ireland is a key focus for us, and I'm able to tune in regularly to the output that we have there. But I'm predominantly in a business role, as you touch on, and you know, thankfully we have very good programmers right across the group who do a fantastic job of running the stations that they do, and the less I meddle in that, the better.
We're often told by Australians that the British radio world is not quite as exciting as theirs is. You've been over here, as you say, a long time now. How would you compare the two markets?
Well, just to be clear, I mean, I didn't work in radio in Australia, but you know, I'm quite familiar with the industry, the wider industry. And indeed, one of the great things, I think, is that there's been a really good cross-pollination of managers and ideas over the years. So lots of very good Australian programmers and presenters have spent their time in the UK and vice versa. And I think we've each, as a broadcast industry, learnt from each other. The reason that perhaps people look at Australia as a more developed, for want of a better phrase, commercial radio environment is simply the fact that, you know, they don't compete with the strength of the BBC in commercial radio in the same way that they do here. And you've had commercial radio stations in Australia that have been operating effectively for 90 years and who have learnt their lessons over that period of time. And I think that just creates a very different environment for people.
Can I ask you about the way you staff your radio stations and your instinct about who works best in a commercial radio environment? Obviously, some decades ago, much of commercial radio management and programming was done by people who'd been trained in the BBC. And my sense is that there's a lot less of that now. You've taken on BBC people in the past. You've trained up your own people in the past. How would you rate those two styles in terms of recruitment?
Look, I think that there are good people right across commercial radio, as there are good people within the BBC. And our job is to find the best of those and give them an environment in which they're able to have a big impact from a programming perspective on the output of our station. So I don't particularly seek out those with experience in one area or another, but I think, you know, that they need to recognise that there are differences in the way that we operate to, for instance, the BBC. And in the context of speech radio, most people will have gained their experience in the BBC, given that effectively, apart from one or two small local stations that have good speech output, it's essentially been the domain of LBC and TalkSport for a long time.
I would imagine that when you look forward, maybe when you do your predictions to the board, you talk about how UTV could be the primary speech radio provider in commercial radio in the UK before very long.
Well, I would have thought we were there now, Trevor.
I'm just thinking in terms of your expansion because of D2, you're likely to be doing a business service, a news service. So your only competitor, I guess, is LBC.
Well, our only competitor commercially is LBC, but our competitor in terms of audience is the BBC, and the BBC dominate the landscape for speech radio in a way that, you know, were it to be the case for music radio, there would be a lot more jumping up and down, I think. If you look at listening share, the BBC currently takes an 84% share of speech radio in this country, which can't be a healthy thing. And I think that D2 and the services that we're looking to launch gives us an opportunity, to a very modest extent, to redress that balance to some extent.
In your evidence to the BBC Trust's review of speech stations, you haven't spared any ammunition, have you, in your attack on Five Live? And the sense I get is that you think that the whole idea of being a mixed sport and news station probably belongs in a pre-internet age. Would that be fair?
Well, I don't think it's ever been set out that Five Live was to be mixed in a sort of, you know, equal sense, a mixed sports and news output. I mean, we've a lot of respect for what Five Live do and the people that are over there, and I'm very pleased to say that we have a very good working relationship with Jono and his team at Five Live, who I think do a fantastic job on the services that they have. Our point is simply that the purpose of Five Live was set up to be a rolling news service, and that the focus has moved beyond that. That actually, you know, one of the very few license conditions that exists in Five Live's service license is that 75% of its output is required to be news.
And do you think that they live up to that? I mean, in your report, you're suggesting that they don't, that they do more sport than they should.
Well, I think that if you were to ask a listener or non-listener, and that's very much what we did in the evidence-based responses that we had. So we conducted a survey through YouGov, which was representative of a national sample, and it quite clearly showed that people's view of the station was that it was primarily a sports station, and words that sprung to mind when thinking of Five Live were football and sport. And indeed, you know, I think that's been backed up in the way in which the station is programmed. And I think that actually there's a fantastic opportunity as a public service broadcaster for BBC Five Live to focus on the news content, which is fantastic and very difficult for a commercial operator to replicate, rather than competing with a free-to-air broadcaster in a commercial landscape who can provide those services, particularly to mainstream sport and particularly to football.
How do you feel when you hear Radio Five Live's strapline that goes, "Where football lives"?
I think in our application, we made the point that, you know, if you read through the service license agreement that exists for Five Live, I forget the exact number, but I think it mentions news 36 times and it doesn't mention football once. So you kind of, you listen to the strapline and wonder, as a public service broadcaster with a significant amount of money, I mean, we are talking tens of millions. I think at last count, it was about £70 million that Five Live spends annually on its output. And historically, the balance has been that, you know, about half of those funds have been spent on sport and predominantly on football. And you have to ask, where is the listener served by allocating the resources in that way, as opposed to doing stuff that commercial radio would find very difficult? And indeed, as the service license sets out, in focusing on that news output, which is very difficult for us and to a lesser extent for LBC and others to do, And yet the coverage of sport is free to air. It's commercial. You know, if you're listening to a Premier League match on TalkSport, you will listen to 90 minutes of commentary without any ads in the middle of that. And so you have to ask the question, where is the distinction of that service in a landscape where the BBC, in its very privileged position, should be providing public service broadcasting that commercial radio can't sustain?
Because what they say, of course, is, well, we do 51 sports and TalkSport don't do anything like that. I have to say it's sometimes hard to find the coverage of those minority sports that they talk about.
Well, it's very easy during the Olympics and very easy during the Commonwealth Games. It is more difficult outside of that, but they have a requirement. And as part of the last service licence review, Five Live were required, I think from memory, to have coverage of 20 sports in peak programming. Now, if you were to ask the listeners whether that's in fact what they're getting on the back of that, I would be surprised if that was the perception, albeit that I'm not denying that over the course of a year, it is entirely probable that that's what Five Live have done.
So, Scott, what's the end game for you here? Do you want, at some point in the future, for Five Live to do less football so that you can do more?
Well, it's not about them doing less so that we can do more. I think that, you know, in the absence of us doing it, Absolute Radio, for instance, still broadcast a Premier League game and match. I think there's lots of commercial entities who would have a fantastic opportunity to pick up some of that output. And I don't think there's any shortage of ability within the commercial sector to do that. And I think that, you know, we should be coming back to the purpose that Five Live was set up for. You know, people have kind of long forgotten that actually it was born out of the original Gulf War, and a realisation that actually, in terms of breaking news, the BBC didn't have a platform at that stage for that breaking news. And in its service licence agreement, there was a recognition that 25% of its output would be non-news. That's not to say that that would necessarily be sport, but that it would be non-news. And actually, I know that the world has moved on to some extent in that there are many services through television that remain available for breaking news. But actually, in radio, there are very few. And I think Five Live do currently serve that purpose very well. But surely there is a conflict for them when, in the middle of a Premier League commentary, there are issues that would relate back to breaking news.
Let me take you on, if I may, to another issue within the UTV business. There was talk that you were going to sell your smaller local stations. What's the latest on that?
Well, we didn't say that we were going to sell those stations. What we said was that we were carrying out a strategic review of the assets that exist there. We put out a stock exchange announcement back in January to say that we were carrying out that review, and that may or may not lead to the sale of some or all of those assets. We're a public company and listed on the stock exchange, and as a result, you know, I can't say much more than we would say to the stock exchange in that way.
I just wonder how encouraging that is for the people who work on those stations, you know, to feel that they might be thought of as disposable.
Well, they're not disposable at all. I think they're fantastic operators of radio. I think that that within UTV they have absolutely flourished. You know, I'm very proud to say that the team of people that work on UTV's local radio stations have grown their hours year on year by 19%. We, given the fact that the resources available to them are much, much smaller than the competition that they face from Global and Bauer, do an absolutely tremendous job. And we're very proud to have them as part of our team. If at some point down the line, some or all of those stations were sold, and I'm not necessarily referring to a process that we have at the minute, but I am absolutely confident that those individuals would flourish in a commercial radio, an expanded commercial radio role or sector. And as I said to the team at the time, that there isn't anything for them to be concerned about by the statement, but unfortunately we can't go into any more detail than that at this stage.
What's your relationship like now, Scott, with the rest of commercial radio? You know, you had a famous falling out with some members of Radio Centre. More recently, you've worked very closely with Bauer, as you were telling us, on the D2 bid. Is it reasonably fraternal and convivial, the world of UK commercial radio at the minute?
It's always been that, Trevor. I mean, the only issue, and the one that you're referring to, is an issue related to Ashley Tabor. You know, I think the relationship between between UTV and Global Radio is a very strong one. We have joint ventures with them and work successfully on businesses and have a lot of respect for the management that exists within Global. And outside of that, the relationship has always been strong. You know, whether that's with Dee at Bauer, whether that's for some of the smaller groups, William Rogers and others, you know, Don Thompson at Celador and so on, we have a very good relationship. We're a 50% owner of First Radio Sales, so actually represent the sales of a lot of those local radio stations. We have remained throughout patrons of the Radio Academy and have looked to support radio and particularly commercial radio wherever we can and foster those relationships.
One of the things I like about you, I hope you don't mind me saying this, is you always seem so jolly, you know, because the world is full of business people who are not. They're kind of aggressive. And, I mean, maybe there is a side of you I never see, but you seem to have a good time. And I just wonder if that's how you feel. Do you know, are you fulfilled by what you do, Scott?
Trevor, it's been fantastic. You know, I am very privileged to run the organisation that I do in TalkSport and with our local radio stations. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity, you know, on the television side as well. But, you know, if I look back over the last 10 years, which has been dominated by the success we've had in TalkSport and the local radio stations, the opportunity, I mean, how could you not enjoy, you know, being involved with a great team of people at TalkSport who've increased their audience, you know, despite all the pressures that exist elsewhere, who've increased their audience over the last 10 years by 50%, who've doubled their turnover in a period where commercial radio has struggled to see growth at all. And now to sit with a blank canvas, or not quite a blank canvas, but, you know, looking at the launch of four more national radio services, including bringing back, you know, a fantastic brand in Virgin Radio.
Scott, thank you ever so much for talking to us this week. As I said, it's been a devil to get hold of you, but I think it was worth it. So we wish you every success in the future.
You're very kind, Trevor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott Taunton. Let's have some news now from Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor, and thank you, Scott. This week in the news, Graham Norton has announced the return of BBC Radio 2 Eurovision. It's back for 4 days with the build-up to the biggest singing contest in Europe, and then the whole event will be live on Saturday night. Ofcom has received applications to run small-scale DAB trials around the UK. We currently know of some in Manchester, Teesside and Hampshire, and we'll bring you more details as we get them on radiotoday.co.uk. And if you'd like an inside tour of Juice FM in Liverpool, head on over to our YouTube channel. The station, if you believe recent reports, is currently being sold to Global. We'll bring you more on that as we get it at radiotoday.co.uk. That's the very latest. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Radio Moment. David Lloyd.
We start this week in 1995, and is it really 20 years since we lost this voice?
Here's news. Starting in September, the BBC begins a new service for fans of popular music. There'll be light, and then there's pop.
We're Sergeant Pepper's now on the high
stand. And then there's always... Oh, and now, Commercial Radio, the service with the biggest hits in Britain, brings you Hello Time.
Capital sounds go round and round, round and round, round and round, round and round, around.
What is the man muttering? Detroit Emeralds on Westbound, and I think of you. What do you think of Capital? Isn't it the greatest station in the world? Yes! They shouted as with one voice, because there was only one voice shouting.
Here is the weather forecast until midnight. Northern Britain will have sunny periods and snow showers. Snow over many central and southern areas will slowly die away.
Hello and welcome to Radio 4 and a programme of sumptuous wit and amusingly light-hearted bantering, chaired by a chap who needs no introduction and certainly...
The world said, farewell, Kenny, 4th of April, 1995.
I'll probably go before you and I'll prepare your space. You have to be philosophical or you go potty. Oh, no, I'm potty anyway, aren't I? Cancel that last sentence.
45 years ago this week, a new Radio 4 schedule, fewer regional opt-outs and more news programmes arrived, including The World Tonight and this.
PM.
Susanna Simons and Robert Williams.
And in PM this evening in the Commons, the government comes under criticism.
Yes, the old sound of PM, which began along with Start the Week with Richard Baker at first and Weekending this week in 1970. Changes at TFM in the North East 2 years ago this week as it began carrying the programmes of Metro.
3, 2, 1.
The transmitter has been seized. Starting Monday at 6 a.m, a new sound
on TFM.
TFM and Metro together this week 2 years ago. Do you remember sitting on the parquet flooring in the school hall, gathered around the radio, poised for those school's programmes? They started this week in 1924.
I'd go to a school and hardly understand a word. Reception was lamentable. I found that questioning children after a broadcast, which I hadn't understood at all, that they'd got everything.
Good morning, children. Will you scatter yourselves over the whole room so that each one of you has plenty of space for movement?
BBC producer George Dixon reflecting on Radio for Schools, which began this week 89 years ago. It's 20 years since Virgin Radio arrived on FM in London after a controversial licence award.
From April the 10th, you can hear classic album tracks and the best new music on Virgin 105.8 FM.
The start of Virgin FM this week in 95. Staying with commercial radio 32 years ago, something new in Surrey.
It was difficult to get everything done on time, but we did get it done on time. And I'm sure that was only as a result of everyone working exceptionally long hours, but we achieved it. We went on air on the due date with a fantastic launch.
Good morning, this is Frank Muir, live, or as live as I'm ever likely to be at this time of the morning, and I'm here really just to say four words. Welcome to County Sound.
BBC local stations have always commandeered the name of the city as their own radio whatever, apart from in Wiltshire, where Wiltshire Radio was already a commercial station by the time BBC arrived. So on the 4th of April 1989, the corporation had to launch with a different name.
It's 6 o'clock. I'm Jane Garner. Good morning. A 29-year-old Roman Catholic man has been shot dead at his home in Ballymoney in County Antrim.
Good morning, this is BBC Wiltshire Sound, putting the Wiltshire back into radio. You're listening to Wiltshire Today with Paul Chandler. All you need to know to get your day off to the right start. News, current affairs, information and entertainment.
BBC Wiltshire Sound launches with Paul Chandler, later becoming BBC Wiltshire. 1989 now, and as the minute waltz fades, a new voice on Radio 4's Just a Minute.
We welcome back Derek Nimmo and Peter Jones and Tim Rice, and for the first time we welcome Paul Merton. Will you...
I remember being nervous the first time I did it. The recording was in late 88, and it went out in 89.
Pinching or nicking is a term that...
Paul Merton making his debut on Just a Minute on Radio 4 this week 26 years ago. On Easter Monday, April the 3rd, 1972, Terry Wogan moved from his afternoon Radio 1 show to the new Radio 2 breakfast show.
Today it's a sort of a two-way ceremony. The sun is coming down from the sky. It would be a big surprise if it came off from the pavements. But up there on the roof, clad in gingham gowns and the prettiest of dresses, some of our very senior executives of the BBC, and of course in front of them, held on a great ceremonial chair, the DG himself.
Wogan on breakfast. It was never going to last, was it? So, with Extra AM launching on the AM frequencies of BRMB and Mercia 26 years ago...
Welcome to XTRA Extra AM. Now, that's the cue for the champagne corks to pop in the boardroom. Go, well, they've stopped listening.
Great North Radio launching the same week.
Tune in to the new sound of GNR for the best of the 70s, 80s and 90s. GNR!
And former Capital Breakfast voice Graham Dean celebrating 66 this week.
First of all, I auditioned for Capital when it was merely a station in the air, when the government had given the go-ahead for it, and I think half of London went to those auditions, so there wasn't really much chance.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David. Thanks also this week to Roy Martin, to Scott Taunton, and to the tireless Jimmy Buckland. This has been a TDC production. Join us again next time if you can.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.